CMU Podcast in association with 7 Digital.
This week, Apple, Universal, Spotify and One Direction. I'm Andy Malt. I'm editor of CMU. I have with me Chris Cook, who is the business editor of CMU. Chris, what have you been doing this week? Don't talk about your show again for ages.
Chris Cook's free speech at the Edinburgh Festival. Still haven't written it, but
unrelated to
this.
I've
written a lot of really interesting stuff this week, some of which we're going to talk about here on the podcast.
Oh, we are.
But alas, not that. I'm a bit distressed because I've just realised that I've got chocolate all over my shirt.
It's all right. It's audio.
It is audio, isn't it? I have to admit that I had a chocolate orange for breakfast this morning.
a whole one?
About two thirds.
Oh, that's fine.
They're on offer in Tesco. They're £1 this week. And I bought one last night when I went to get my tea. And then I forgot to eat it. And it was there on my desk when I got in this morning. And so I thought, chocolate. It's not like a Christmassy breakfast, isn't it? Chocolate orange. And of course, it's one of your five a day.
Chris Cook is, we should note, quite an unhealthy man.
But somehow I managed to get half of it on my shirt. So that's a bit disgusting.
or a third of it, perhaps.
Andy Malt hasn't been in CMU HQ today. And so what he doesn't know is that that drilling has begun outside our office.
Of course.
And what you don't know listening to this is that we recently moved, I say recently moved CMHQ. CMU offices used to be in Finsbury Square. And then at the start of the year, we moved just down the road to another bit of Shoreditch. And our old offices were next to a building site. So for about 18 months, one of the reasons we couldn't do a podcast was that for 18 months, we were next to a building site with incessant drilling. And then we moved to these new offices, all nice and peaceful, all night. But then today, this rumbling began. But I actually found it quite comforting. It was like, oh yeah, that's what my life's been missing. A drill on the other side of the wall. But the good news is, of course, now we don't record the podcast in the CMU offices. So the fact that there's a drill next door doesn't matter anymore because we're in these lovely studios. So there won't be drilling in the background of this. You'll have to imagine the drill.
We'll put some in later.
Yeah, we could always drop it in as a special effect. I'm sure that could be arranged.
Well, that's the construction industry covered. Shall we talk about the music industry?
Go on then,
bit?
If you insist.
All right, well, we don't have to.
We're talking about the Federal Trade Commission. I bet they've been investigating something in construction this week, because
it's
the sort of thing that they would do.
Yes, although they've been investigating something else that is relevant to our interests.
They have.
What's that?
So the Federal Trade Commission, a branch of the US government, has been investigating Apple. I think the FTC are always investigating something about Apple because they're such a big, bloody, powerful, rich company. And when you're a big, bloody, rich, powerful company, government bodies get interested in your affairs. But specifically, they've been looking at the Apple tax, which we mentioned last week.
We covered very briefly.
I think it was one of those, list things that we do in the middle of the podcast. So this is the fact that if you sell an app through the Apple App Store, Apple charge a 30% commission. So they take, if it's a £1 app, they take 30p of the app. And that's true if it's a straight download app where you pay when you download. But it's also true if the app is free to download, but then subsequently there is a subscription element and the subscription is taken and the money is taken through the app. What I believe they like to call an in-app purchase.
I think that's true, yes.
That's what app fans like to call it. And so if an in-app purchase happens within the app, on the Apple ecosystem, on an iPhone or an iPad, then Apple take 30%. Now, that's not new. And indeed, it was controversial way back, wasn't it? In the early days of the App Store. And it was controversial from a music perspective back then, because it suddenly became clear that services like Spotify, or actually, I seem to remember, it was actually Rhapsody who were particularly vocal about this back in the day. They suddenly realised that if people subscribe to the streaming music services through the app, on the iPhone, Apple were going to take 30%.
Yeah, and they're giving 70% of their money to the music industry, and then they were told they would give the rest of it to Apple.
Yeah.
So that's not going to work.
Fans of maths would work out that leaves the Spotify or the Rhapsody or the Tidal or whoever with no money. So that's not really going to work. And I don't know whether they went to the record companies and the music publishers and said, would you like to take this hit? But normally when that happens, the labels and the publishers say, no, we'd rather not take the hit. Thank you very much, Mr. Digital Streaming Platform. You're a tech startup. You take all of the risk. And so how quite a lot, I don't know if it's all of the digital service providers, I've not been through and checked them all. But certainly Spotify do it, and I think Tidal
do as well, definitely.
I don't know about Deezer. But basically, if you choose to subscribe to their services through the app, an in-app purchase, remember, then they just add the £3 on top. So rather than being $10 or $9.99 a month to subscribe, it's $12.99 if you do it through the app. Now, Of course, you don't have to subscribe through the app. Where else can you subscribe?
Well, you could subscribe through the company's own website, but isn't there, there's something in the Apple terms and conditions that prohibits you from advertising that that's the case within the app.
The two key things are that Apple's app rules say, well, they say a lot of things, but the two things of particular contention is, first of all, they say that you have to offer in-app purchase. So you can't say, right, well, we don't want to pay Apple £3 per month per subscriber, so we just won't offer it. They'll have to come to our website. You're not allowed to do that. You have to offer in-app purchase as an option. And then, yes, there's all sorts of rules about what you can and can't say, because obviously what Spotify would like to say is they'd like to have a big yellow box or green. Green's their colour. Their colour's been quite controversial, hasn't it?
Yeah.
I can't remember if we've talked about that on the podcast.
No.
A yellow box on that new nasty shade of green that they're using. And in capital letters...
I like it.
You like it. You like the new... I preferred the old one. But then I'm a bit of a Luddite when it comes to...
That is true.
To apps upgrading. They would like to have a little post-it note on the front of the app saying, idiots, do not subscribe here. You will be charged £3 more. Go to Spotify.com, do the transaction there, and then come back and log in. You'll still be able to access all the services, but you won't have to pay the £3 premium. But they're not allowed to do that because Apple would ban the app if they tried to.
No. Now, this is obviously, as we say, this has been happening for quite some time. This is not new news. You know, when did this is like at least, I mean, it was like a year, 18 months. More
I think
that.
Steve Jobs was still alive.
Okay, so it's a while ago. That they introduced, in fact, it seems like quite a Steve Jobs policy, doesn't it?
Well, look, I'm pretty sure it was him who defended it.
Yeah.
And because, I mean, what they said was, well, it's perfectly fair that the retailer charges a commission. And actually, the newspapers who have apps where they take subscriptions through the app, the newspapers generally have been fine because the newspapers say, well, we always used to have to pay the newsagent 30%.
Yeah.
So it's no different. That doesn't really work for Spotify, etc., for the reasons we've already explained.
No. But the reason this has become of interest now to the US government, the FTC, is that Apple has launched its own streaming service. I'm sure you remember we discussed it in great length over several podcasts a while ago. When
if you missed that and you'd like the idea of us talking about Apple Music again and again and again and again, go through the archives. It's all there.
It's all there. We discussed it. There's a lot. If you've never heard of Apple Music, then you should probably go back and listen to those podcasts. And I'm slightly confused as to how you found this one now. But anyway, so it's interesting now. So Apple has launched this streaming service, which will charge, like all the other streaming services, $9.99 a month for you to subscribe to it. However, if you buy it through your iOS device, you won't get charged an extra £3 because Apple doesn't need to charge itself an extra £3. And then that means it's undercutting all of its competitors, and that starts to look anti-competitive.
It does. So, obviously, at the moment, Apple Music is on the free trial. Everybody is still on the free months, not paying. But come October, as the free trial start to expire, Apple Music users will start paying. And what the Spotify's and the Tidal's are saying, they're not saying this on the record, but what they're saying behind the scenes is that this is now unfair, because if someone goes through the App Store and looks at all of the different streaming music services that are available, there's Spotify, there's Tidal, there's Apple Music. Oh, Apple Music is £3 cheaper than everybody else. Or we'll go with Apple Music. And so, yes, the allegation and the reason why the FTC are involved is that is anti-competitive. It is Apple exploiting its dominance over here in the smartphone market, in its control of the smartphone, the Apple operating system, the phone, iOS, that thing. they control that. And they're exploiting that dominance over here. I'm pointing over here. Andy will confirm.
He is.
Okay.
Yeah.
In order to gain competitive advantage over here.
Chris is now pointing over there.
Okay, with their silly music service. And so the rumour is that Spotify put in a complaint about this. We don't know whether that's true, but we do know that the FTC have been digging on this for a couple of weeks now, maybe longer. The first rumours of this came, before the last podcast, because that's why we mentioned it on the last podcast. And what we hear this week, this is via The Verge, who do generally have pretty good sources when it comes to this kind of story, is that this has now become a proper investigation. They're no longer just looking into it. This is now a proper investigation. They've probably got, I don't know, a folder on somebody's desk with a name written on the front of it. And they've subpoenaed a number of streaming services asking questions, forcing streaming services, but I assume Apple, but also their competitors, to input. So, yes, FTC investigation underway. Yeah. Does this violate, obviously this is America, does it violate US competition law, or what they always insist on calling antitrust law?
Yeah,
because the Americans are like that. So we'll see. And the point is, I don't think that they're going to say Apple can't charge this 30% commission, because it's a shop Apple's the retailer, why shouldn't they? But I think it's these terms and conditions that we talked about.
You have to relax your policy, you have to allow... I mean, well, I guess what Spotify would like is that rather than having any sort of sign-up, it just says click here to go to our website and sign up. And in fact, I mean, you said that Spotify haven't publicly come out and said this is unfair. However, a couple of weeks ago, and the reason we discussed it on last week's podcast was that Apple had emailed all their customers who were currently paying $12.99 and said, you do know you could be getting this cheaper.
Yes, because obviously there's nothing to stop them circumventing Apple and emailing people. And once they've signed up, they've got the email addresses. Although, unfortunately, because of the way it's all set up, although they were emailing people saying, idiot, stop paying £3 more a month. I'm paraphrasing slightly in what they said. But the instructions were to stop paying this £3 extra a month. Go into your Spotify account. Delete your Spotify account. Go to Spotify.com and start again. I don't quite know what happens with your playlists.
Yeah, they weren't. I don't know if they were offering any kind of transfer of your playlists or not, or just saying, just yeah, your playlists are shit.
With hindsight,
delete them all.
With hindsight, we probably should have read the email rather than just saying, oh, there was an email. But yeah, so FTC are now investigating this. Will they take on big bad Apple?
They may also, well, just a quick footnote on Apple Music. Tim Cook was on an investor call this week, encouraging investors.
Investor call. It sounded like investical. You just said
investor call.
Well,
no, investor call is what I said.
Given there were rumours this morning, that BuzzFeed might have been bidding for the Financial Times is up for sale, and the rumour was that BuzzFeed were trying to buy it. Well, that would be an investor call.
An investor call. Yeah, fine. Anyway, so
investor call.
Tim Cook was on an investor call. Tim Cook, obviously CEO of Apple, and he was encouraging investors to carry on investing, which is, I guess, what is the purpose of that call. And he said that millions and millions of customers are already experiencing the Apple Music streaming service. I mean, obviously, none of those millions and millions of people are currently paying for it. But, you know, you'd hope to retain some of them. He reckoned 15,000 artists to sign up to their stupid Connect thing that they've got on there. But, yeah, he was very, very positive about it and saying what a great thing it was.
And millions listening to Beats One, he also...
And, oh, yes, millions of people listening to Beats One.
But it's interesting, it's quite vague, isn't it? Millions and millions. It's like, well, does that have to be at least 4 million? Because the first millions would have to be two to be a millions. Yeah. And then another million, so that's 2 plus 2, so at least 4 million people.
But so it seems vague, but could actually be very specific.
Perhaps he was being very specific. Although, the big challenge is, yes, I mean, a lot of those people, they've just upgraded their phone. Suddenly the music app where their MP3s used to be is now Apple Music. They've pressed a button, it's all streaming. But when it comes to having to pay for the service, obviously they're hoping that most people will either forget that they've already signed up to pay and the money will just start coming out of their bank accounts.
And it's not that easy to turn off the automatic
exactly.
payment.
Or even if they think about it in September, they'll be like, where the hell do I stop it charging me any money? But will people start paying for it in the autumn? Well, that is the big test. But hey, well done Apple Music for getting all those millions and millions of users.
4 million.
Yes. Good luck on the old FTC thing too.
So Universal Music Publishing has announced major new enhancements to its royalty window system. What is the royalty window system, Chris?
Are you wanting me to make this exciting? Is that what we're going for?
Well, you could
here?
Use the exciting quote that the company put in their own press release.
What did they say?
They said that it's their state-of-the-art online royalty account portal.
I don't think that makes it sound any more
what?
Exciting.
What? State-of-the-art online royalty
account portal.
Like royalty like the Queen.
This is actually more important than everything we previously said in this bit suggests. In music publishing, it's all about royalty data, okay? Forget about songs. No one cares about songs anymore. It's all about royalty data. So if you're a songwriter and you're signed to a publisher, how is the publisher informing you on when your songs have been used, where they've been used, what money that's been generated, how much money you're going to get paid, whether the money's coming to you from the publisher or whether it's coming to you from your collecting society? This is what people want to know. And it used to be that songwriters didn't have a clue and they didn't really care. But then companies like Cobalt came along and said, aha, in this digital age, you should know exactly when your songs have been used by the minute.
Yeah.
And so we're going to give you this great database system that will tell you, oh, someone's just streamed your song on YouTube. And so you're due 0.00001p. And over here, you got played on Radio 1. So here's 60 quid. And so Cobalt have been building this system and they've been talking about it a lot.
Yes.
as wired readers will know, it was basically positioned as the saviour of the music industry by Wired magazine earlier this year, as opposed to Spotify.
Their annual saviour of the music industry article.
Previously Daniel Ek from Spotify. This time it was the guys at Cobalt.
Although that was always slightly disappointing that the Cobalt cover was just a picture of Skrillex, whereas the Spotify cover was Daniel Ek presented as Jesus with a halo. That's what I want to see from a saviour of the music industry cover.
So Wired, you should redo that cover for Andy. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
So anyway, Cobalt have been talking a lot about the fact that they've got this super-duper data platform, and they've sort of repositioned themselves, for a royalties administration company, which is what they've always been. They're sort of now seen as this sort of this tech startup.
Tech innovator.
Even though they're not a startup. But so a lot of people are talking about data. Now, to be fair to other publishers, it's not only Cobalt who are doing this, although Cobalt system is particularly good and they have talked about it a lot, but other publishers have also been investing, and you do sense that this has become a thing now, that when people choose what publishers to work with, whether that's actually signing to the publisher and giving the copyrights or selling the copyrights to the publisher so that they then control the rights and you're just due royalties, or whether, as actually happens more with Cobalt, you keep hold of the copyright but you use that company to all the tedious royalty administration to make sure, find out when your songs have been used and to collect the money. But whatever, increasingly publishers and rights administrators are competing on how good their database system is. Now, Universal, obviously the biggest music rights company in the world, although the second biggest music publisher, because actually the Sony publishing company is a bit bigger, but Universal Music Publishing, they have in the last year been talking up their data portal quite a bit, and there were some significant advancements this week.
Yes. So, I mean, they're quite good. Look, assuming they work, which I assume they do. So you get your balance updates as royalties are processed during each royalty period, which is how long? 6 months?
Or maybe 3 months.
Maybe 3 months.
One or the other.
Who knows? Anyway.
But the point of this is, in the olden days, you used to get a quarterly or twice yearly statement, and now you should be able to go in there and see what money's coming in as of now.
And, in fact, you can request an advance on what you're owed at no additional fee, which that's quite nice.
It does. It suggested it was just a big fat button and you could go in there.
You hit the give me money button and money just arrives. Someone bikes it around in cash.
They're going to build a computer which has a little
coin dispenser. They just print it off in your house.
Yeah, where it just prints off. And when you'll say, you've just had a little play on YouTube, you're due 0.00001p, do you want the money? And you can press a button and 0.0001p will arrive in your bank account, is how I understand that will work.
Basically, yeah.
So that was the big announcement from Universal Music Publishing this week. And as I say, although royalty administration, doesn't sound very interesting, within music publishing and indeed music rights in general, there's more and more pressure on record companies to be doing this sort of stuff. Because in digital, in theory, there is no reason why you shouldn't have a screen. And obviously, Willard, who runs Cobalt, this is what he always talks about, isn't it? You should be able to have a screen in front of you that is literally telling you this is how your song has been used in the last 24 hours. That might be 20,000 different uses across the streaming platforms, across YouTube, across radio, across live performance as people are putting in their set list. You should be able to see that at any one time, see how much money's been generated, what your cut of that money is. And of course, Universal have now added this pay me now button. There is still quite a lot to be done to have that real-time data, not least because the streaming services report monthly.
Yeah.
So although the streaming services do know what was played two minutes ago, how the publishers and the collecting societies find out is at the end of the month, they get a massive spreadsheet with everything that's been streamed in the last month. So because of things like that, there are still actually quite a lot of delays.
Well, Cobalt has access to Spotify's real-time data, I believe.
It's not clear to me quite how that works, and they keep promising me to give me a demo. And to be fair to Cobalt, it's me that's been useless at arranging that demo. Rather than them. Although they have stopped emailing me now, I noticed, because I kept not responding to their emails. But even with Cobalt's super-duper system, there are lots of other gatekeepers in the system, collecting societies or other people that the money has to go through. That means at the moment you're not getting perfect data.
Yes, and so when the money artists are receiving is often, once it's gone through the collecting society, it could be 18 months, 2 years old.
Yes, particularly if it's moved through collecting societies in different countries, which sometimes is what happens with the money on the publishing rights side. So, the technology is being built. There's still lots of stuff going on behind the scenes that needs to be improved, but it is a big step in the right direction. And talking of the collecting societies getting their asses into gear and doing all of this better.
So PRS Gamer and STIM, who are the collecting societies respectively of the UK, Germany and Sweden, have formed an alliance a little while ago. They've kind of made that formal now. They've launched their own hub. What are we calling it? Prez Gamer STIM.
Yeah, I think that sounds good. It sounds very Soviet.
The Prez Gamer STIM system.
Yeah.
So its aim is to reduce the time and cost that it takes to process all the data that comes in from the various, you know, streaming services, live companies, wherever, all the data that's coming in that they need to report back to their artists, make that just, you know, more streamlined, easy to work with.
So rather than PRS and Gamer and STIM all doing that separately, the idea is, well, we'll build this hub and so all of the data will just come into one place and then we have to process it once instead of three times, and that will speed things up. Also, they'll share data. Now, actually, STIM and PRS have shared their data for quite a long time under a thing called ICE.
Which Gamer is now going to be a part of.
It stands for something. I think the C is copyright. The I is probably international. Enterprise, do you think, for the E? Endeavour.
Excellence. Exciting.
So PRS and STIM have shared their data.
Oh, we stopped guessing.
We stopped guessing E words. But you're welcome to write some down, and perhaps we could have them at the end of the podcast. Something to look forward to. PRS and STIM have been sharing data for a while, and one of the reasons why that is actually more important than it sounds is each collecting society has a log of the songs that its members own or control or wrote, and what percentage. Because obviously with songs, copyrights are often co-owned because songs are often co-written. And so one of the problems you get in music publishing is it might be that PRS represents one songwriter who wrote half a song, and PRS's system will say, oh, and our songwriter owns 60% of the song. And then a STIM member who also wrote the song, STIM system might say, no, our songwriter owns 60% of the song.
And the Gamer will say, well, our songwriter owns 50%
of the song. Yeah, and there ain't 170% of royalties to be had. And so when that happens, the streaming service, who then is invoiced for double the money, then won't pay and says, no, you need to sort this out. And so by merging the databases of those three societies, the chances of that conflict happening are reduced. And as a result of that, the money should move through the system faster. The other thing this hub is going to do, it's actually going to offer licenses for all of the repertoire of those three societies across most of Europe. So there is a licensing element to this hub too. And you mentioned that this has been in development for a long time. A number of years they've been planning this. And the reason why it took until now to actually properly launch it was because it needed to get European Commission approval, because the European Commission is always nervous when big collecting societies, particularly in the music publishing industries, collecting societies all work together. They say, is that anti-competitive? Even though the societies turned round and said, well, hang on a second, you, the European Commission, keep telling us that we should simplify music licensing. And this simplifies music licensing. What do you mean? You're going to investigate us and maybe block it. But anyway, the European Commission gave it the green light earlier this year, recently, actually.
Yeah.
And so what happened this week was PRS Gamer STIM officially said, right, what are we calling it? Prez Gamer STIM is live. It isn't actually live in that it's all working, but the institution is live. They've set it up as a formal entity. The deal has been signed, and now it's all go. And the hope is that it'll all be running by next year.
So that'll be exciting. Now the big five publishing companies are already direct licensing their deals anyway. How would this affect that in any way?
Yes, so when I say that this new hub will be licensing the combined PRS, STIM and Gamer catalogue, so all the songs that those three societies represent, that's not strictly speaking true, because as you say, the big five publishers, which are Andy Malt, we said two of them.
Universal?
Yeah.
Sony?
Yeah.
Sony ATV?
Yeah.
That was one.
It was.
So that's two.
There's a slash between the Sony and the ATV, but yeah, we can imagine that.
BMG?
BMG.
Cobalt?
Cobalt.
And, oh.
Yeah. Yeah. What's the fifth?
Warner Chappell.
Yes. Look at that.
What if I win?
If I hadn't smudged my chocolate orange all over my shirt, I would have given it to you as a prize. So the big five in Europe direct deal with digital. They do so in partnership with the collecting society. So it's not strictly direct dealing in the way that the record companies direct deal. They basically form joint venture organisations with collecting societies, but the publisher leads on the negotiation on behalf of both the publisher and the collecting society, and then once a deal is done, then both partners are involved. There are very complicated reasons as to why it has to be done that way, to do with the way publishing contracts work and the fact that actually the collecting society controls some of the copyright, but let's not go into that now. Just know that when it comes to the repertoire that is controlled and owned by the Big Five, they are negotiated in a different way through entities called things like Solar, which is the Sony ATV joint venture. What's the other one called? Have we got it down here?
No.
There's others. I know that Warner's is called Pedal. Don't know why I know that. I just do. And the joint venture vehicles that do this direct licensing that are affiliated to PRS and Gamer, which is the Sony one and the BMG one, will also be part of the hub. So they won't be part of the license. You'll have to go and negotiate your license with Sony ATV's Solar entity and BMG, whatever theirs is called. But once the deals are done, then all the data and the processing of the money and all of that will be done by this hub too. And indeed, they're saying anyone else wants to join this hub, whether it be another collecting society or whether it be another major publisher that's doing the direct dealing thing, if they want us to process their royalties, then we're more than happy to do so. So the hub is open, people.
And now everyone is happy.
Everyone is happy.
Publishing is sorted.
It is. All the problems
are
gone.
So we can just move on
now. So we will never talk of this ever again. And I think we can all agree that that's a good development. Okay, time for CMU Approved now, where Andy Malt tells you some tracks and artists and videos and other stuff that you should be checking out, as has appeared in the CMU Daily this week. Let's do it in reverse order. Why not? Just to mix it up a little bit. So in the most recent CMU Daily, as we record this, you tipped Brune.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
They're a Norwegian kind of indie pop group. I suppose they've got a lot of influences. A bit of a kind of a hip-hop lilt to the track of Approved this week. Can you have a hip-hop lilt? Yes, let's assume you
if
can.
You want one.
It's a track called Iris. It's good. It's like it's my favourite kind of pop track in that it's really miserable. And it's a chirpy pop song about jealousy and paranoia. And who doesn't like that? It's their debut single in the UK. It was their debut single in Norway as well, just last year. They've got an album called Yoga coming out at some point. That's also already out in Norway if you want to buy an import or something.
Yeah, or if you live in Norway.
Or if you live in Norway.
If you live in Norway.
Some people apparently do.
Quids in. Kurt Vile is next.
Kurt Vile. Everyone likes Kurt Vile, don't they? He is, I would say, a long-term CMU favourite. We like him a lot. He's got a new album coming out in September called Believe I'm Going Down. And he told Rolling Stone, I think earlier this year, possibly like April, something like that, like when he'd sort of just finished the album, that he wanted to get back to kind of the feeling of his early work of just like writing a song on his sofa and it'd be kind of quite lo-fi in terms of like the songwriting, not the production. The production is very good. We've discussed before my hatred of lo-fi production unnecessarily. He has very good production, but lo-fi in that it sounds like, you know, it was written by a guy sitting on a sofa. So it's got quite a, you know, like a late night kind of feel. The song is called Pretty Pimpin'. I don't know why, but it's good.
So from a long-term CMU favourite to a recent CMU favourite that used to be a non-favourite.
Yeah, Foles.
Who apparently you didn't like originally.
Oh, God, no.
Back when they were big news.
Yeah, when everyone was going falling over themselves for Foles, I didn't get it. Didn't get it at all. And then the second album came out and it was like, this is a big change in direction. So yeah, it's a change in direction that I don't like. But then the third album came out and they're like, it's a big change in direction, and it was, and I liked it. So that's perseverance is key in all these things. Now they've got a fourth album coming out. They've already released, in fact, they've released two tracks off it, and they performed a new one on Radio 1 this week. So that's three songs that are out there. I'm still approving. This week they released Mountain at My Gates, which seems to be kind of in keeping. I think what they're going for is more simple. Like, I suppose when they were first around, whenever that was, in 1812, they were described often as a math rock band. I never quite agreed with that tag, but I don't think anyone ever agrees with that.
It was
tag.
A tag people were using a lot at the time.
Yeah, about most things. But they were a little bit technical with stuff. This seems to be they're more simplistic in performing and kind of focusing more on the song. Not that their songwriting wasn't good before, but it's sort of like the focus seems to be more on the songs rather than, you know, the performance of them that sounds like the performance is crap. That's what I'm saying is it's good. Just go and listen to it.
And finally, Frida Sandemo.
Yeah. She's, you know, this is her third time appearing in the CMU approved column. So well done her.
I'm going to send her a chocolate orange.
Not many people get to that.
While they're still a pound.
She is a Swedish pop musician. She has a new EP coming out in the autumn, and this track, Stay Young, is the first track from it, which is kind of, I would say, quietly euphoric. It more nudges you in the back than shouts in your face. And she's also in the film adaptation of John Niven's Kill Your Friends, which is coming out later this year.
Both in the film
although,
and the soundtrack.
Although the press release talked that up, I do think she's playing quite a minor role. But let's not belittle that. She's still in a film, and that's more than you have ever been, Chris, isn't it?
I have never been in a film,
yeah,
that's true.
Not even been trying, have you?
No. Well, I am doing a show at the Edinburgh Festival. It's called ChrisCooksFreeSpeech.com. Yeah, CompleteMusicUpdate.com, talking of web addresses. But after you've typed that in, /approved, and you will find more about all of those recommended artists,
yep.
and you can press play and listen to the tracks that we've been talking about.
Or go to the show notes for this show, and you'll find not only links to all the approveds, but all the stories we're talking about here, so you can find out more, as if you would need to find out more than we've already said.
Now, talking about discovering new music...
I see what you've done there.
We said we weren't going to do cheesy segues on the all-new CMU podcast.
But that was too good.
But there you go. So Spotify, this week, they launched something new.
Yeah.
And it was called Discover Weekly.
Yeah.
Which is a bit of a rubbish name, actually. It's only just occurred to me that that's a bit of a rubbish name. But explain to us what Discover Weekly is. And you have discovered Weekly.
Well, this week.
Yes. So you can tell us, as a user, what you're getting here.
Yeah, well, Spotify Discover has been a thing for a while. It sort of changed into different things over time. I mean, originally it was a section of the app you could, it was in the mobile app and the desktop software, and you could go in there and it would just recommend you a load of stuff like tracks, albums, gigs, things it thought you might like. And it was actually really good, and I found a lot of stuff through that.
And that was always based on what you'd listened to before. So it's like a Pandora, if you like that,
yeah,
you'll like this.
It's kind of based on your listening, or what you've got saved in your playlist and things like that. And it was useful, but I think its problem was that it was just a button in the app. I would say the majority of people probably just ignored it. And when you opened it, I mean, if you wanted something quick, it's quite a daunting, this long list of stuff that you might like. So they sort of changed it, and they made it a playlist in their browse section, which I think then it just got lost. So now Spotify Discover Weekly is a playlist that sits at the top of your list of playlists in Spotify. So you're going to see it because, everyone's looking at their list of playlists.
It's going to be annoying if you're a bit OCD and you like your playlist to be in alphabetical order, because Discover Weekly is always going to be there at the top.
No one does that.
Okay.
And it sits there at the top, and every Monday it will update with like a two-hour playlist of stuff it thinks you might like, which might be kind of new music, old music, middling-aged music. And,
Music, basically,
but based on your what it perceives as your interests.
And you get a new batch every week. So up until now, it sounded like you're quite keen on this. Well done, Spotify, for taking something that was already quite good but underused, evolving it and putting it there, and that's great. We should add, there were plenty of people on the social networks.
I was going to say, there are caveats to what I just
said. Two things. A, this is really great, well done, Spotify. And B, I'm listening to it right now and it's really good. It's what most people were saying, not you.
No, but it should stress, a lot of people found it very useful. Also, I find that these automated discovery things on all services very rarely work for me. And I think it's partly because I listen to... As well as using Spotify as my kind of music player of the stuff I listen to, I also use it to listen to just new music. And not necessarily...
Stuff that I may or may not like. Yeah.
So I think it probably makes my listening habits look a bit weird. So as a result, my playlist was 2 hours of stuff that I mostly hated. So it wasn't that successful. But it will update next Monday, and maybe it will be really... great.
Second time's the charm.
I'm willing to...
If Foles have taught us anything, actually third time's the charm.
Yeah, so maybe 2 weeks from now,
yeah,
it's going to be really, really great and I'm going to love it.
I say, I mean, I I haven't checked it out yet. I haven't opened up the Spotify app this week, so I must do so at some point and give it a check. But I'm likewise, all of those...
Because it might seize up if you don't know.
Yeah, all of those services where they recommend stuff based on what you've listened to before, I've never been very impressed with any of them. And I did, I remember at one point I sort of had a real play with Spotify, what was called Spotify Radio at the time. I don't know if it still is. Where it looks at what you've listened to before and you've put in some more information. And it was always rubbish. It didn't work for me. I remember Last FM never, some people raved about Last FM in that regard. I never got Last FM's recommendations. In fact, the only service of that kind that I did used to find was sort of working for me was Pandora, back in the days when you could use Pandora over here. The big bad Pandora. So I think I've always rated their service more than everybody else's. But there's lots of stuff going on behind the scenes. They're tapping everybody else's playlists, aren't they? So all the people who are putting playlists into the Spotify system, which is something stupid, like 2 billion playlists are in there now. And they're looking at what people are, so not just what you're playing, what other people are playing, but what they're curating into those playlists.
Yeah.
And somehow using that information to inform this service.
So I think it is quite clever. As I said, it didn't really... Well, at first attempt, it didn't really work for me. But that said, the original Spotify Discover service, I did find quite useful. And that's possibly because it was just a long, endless list of stuff and you could keep scrolling through it. But, I mean, I'm willing to reserve... I mean, although I did moan about it on Twitter this week. That said, someone from Spotify got in touch and asked for my feedback on it. So, you know, maybe that's going to improve it.
So they may get it right second time round. And it's interesting, obviously, this is all part of Spotify's efforts to try and help people navigate the stupid amount of content that is on that platform, which is a challenge that all the streaming services face. And obviously, Deezer have always made a big deal about how they have human editors. Apple Music have made a big deal about curation and how they're helping people navigate. And so it's another step in that direction to try and help people find music and to discover new music. Although... all of these things come back. Obviously, everyone in the music industry is very excited about this. All the people in sort of geeky digital music excited about this. But I still come back to the challenge that more mainstream users, and we all know these services need to start attracting mainstream users, and the hope is that Apple Music will start attracting mainstream users. For the sorts of people who traditionally got most of their music listening to Capital FM, rather than people like yourself who yeah. would, you know, go all over the place trying to find new music, actually, discovery is not the turn-on that it is for people who work in the music industry. And how it works in radio is you have 40 tracks that everyone knows and loves, and then you sneak about 4 or 5 in a week that they won't... Initially, they'll be like, oh, what's this? But then because it's in amongst all the songs they like, they start to get to know it, and then they start to like it.
Yeah.
I've not seen any of the streaming services taking that sort of radio knowledge, even though they're all desperately trying to get a mainstream audience... applying it to what they're doing.
Well, it's in on that regard. I mean, it seems a bit strange that they're kind of going, we're going to take, we know everything you've ever listened to. We're going to take all that and we're going to recommend you stuff that
you've never listened to.
That you've never listened to before. Actually, you probably would get more traction going,
we've picked out your favourites.
We've picked out the stuff that you used to listen to loads and probably love that you've seemed to have forgotten about.
And although obviously for people like Andy Maltz,
I mean, Netflix does that with movies, doesn't it? It says, do you want to watch this again? So no, I've watched it.
But for music, it would work.
But for music, that would work.
But for people like you, the idea of listening to Capital with 47 tracks on a loop drives you insane. But that is what most people like.
Yeah.
Most consumers. And it's always fascinating when you talk to radio people. I remember The Great Escape a few years ago. We had Sammy Jacob, who founded XFM back in the day. And we had Matt Deegan, who's a great radio guy. And he runs a little radio station, does a lot of radio production. And they were talking, about the Radio 1 playlists. And they were sort of saying, you know, well, Radio 1, they should probably drop in a more unfamiliar tracks and maybe one or two extra unfamiliar tracks an hour. But then Sammy was like, they'd lose 1 million listeners if they did that.
Yeah.
But they're Radio 1 and it's not about the listeners and they should do it. And it's just interesting having radio people's gut instinct of just add that extra little bit of the unfamiliar. And people like new stuff. They get bored of old stuff, but just too much and people will tune out. And I'm not convinced, even though this is a great service for sort of core music fans.
Which is why I think, you know, like Beats is going to have problems long term, because Beats seems to be all about like, here's new stuff,
yes,
new stuff all the time.
The music industry loves that, and that's a great service. It's great that they're doing that, but it's this mainstream potential that we're looking for. And I'm still not convinced that any of the services have truly cracked it, and that is still all to play for.
Okay, we're running out of time. And there's so much we haven't had time to talk about. Let's have a quick, very, very quick look through some things that we didn't have time to talk about.
Because we wouldn't want to lose any minutes to talk about One Direction.
Exactly.
There's a lot
to say about One Direction. So Rhapsody, as it says here, for reasons of CMU in-jokes, has 3 million users.
Yes, so Rhapsody operates in the US. The same company operates as Napster worldwide. They announced this week it's 3 million users. Given that Rhapsody's been going for bloody ages and Napster, legit Napster's been going for bloody ages too, that's not that impressive. Having said that, you sense that it was a company that lost its way and now is really pulling it back. And they were saying, I mean, this time last year they had 2 million, now they've got 3 million, so...
They're
good
on the rise, yeah. And it still makes them one of the top five biggest streaming services in the world.
Yeah.
So that tells you a lot about streaming services.
And Andy's very... If you go to the CMU website and look at this story, go to the show notes and look through this story, you'll see the Napster logo that Andy made when Napster and Rhapsody merged, whenever it was, several years ago. And he's very pleased with it.
Very
so you should all
that.
Go and check
Some
it out.
Very good design work gone in that. Another streaming service, Deezer, has formed an alliance with Ifttt.
What's if?
If this, then that, which is a service that I already sound like I don't know what it is, but I do use it a lot. It basically connects different online services. So you take one thing and you say, if this happens on this thing, then do that on this other thing.
So, for example, you could take the CMU podcast RSS feed and have it automatically tweet.
You could.
Everybody should do that.
Yeah, everyone, all of you, do that now. Sign up for
just so you get to know what if does.
But Deezer is the first streaming service to be a part of this. So you can do things like, if you favourite a track on Deezer, it will tweet it.
Or you can email your mum.
Or it will email your mum. Yeah. Which, you know, maybe your mum wants to hear what music you like.
So.
Mine does.
Interesting little development from Deezer.
We discussed the private copy nonsense that was going on. There's been an update to that this week, which is that it's now illegal to rip your CDs.
So again,
please stop it. You had that 2-week window. Now everyone stop.
Yes, we talked about this a few weeks ago, how the music industry, it's not that they don't want people to be able to rip CDs, it's just that they want a levy system. There's a dispute with the government, and the result of all of this is a temporary thing, but it comes back to bad press for the music industry, because the headline is, music industry stops you from ripping your CDs again.
Yeah.
But that's not really what happened. But yes, for the time being, it is illegal again.
You know, for 2 weeks, everyone was frantically ripping their CDs that they've never been able to rip before.
And now you can't.
And now they can't again.
It's all up for renegotiation.
The police will be around this afternoon. The BBC Review.
So yes, the Conservative government has begun a massive review of the BBC. This is all reading up to the Royal Charter, through which the BBC gets its licence fee funding, is up for review. Everyone seems to think, actually, the deal's been done on the money behind the scenes. But this review, led by John Whittingdale, Culture Minister, is going to basically look at everything to do with the BBC, how it's funded, how it's regulated, what services it offers. And all the BBC supporters are nervous that just the way they've listed the questions in the paper that was published last week makes it seem like a very negative review towards the BBC. So,
and
you know,
who would have thought that the Conservative government was negative towards the BBC?
There may not be a BBC in a year's time. Who knows?
Maybe they'll merge it with the NHS.
Perhaps they will. And then shut them both down.
Yeah. Alibaba, the Chinese internet company, is expanding its music offerings. What's the company called? Ali Music Group.
It is. So Alibaba, big deal in China, big company. They've already got a few streaming services. Oh, I say a few, two, I think. Two streaming services, music services up and running. But what they did this week is they've launched a new music division. It's being run by an ex-Warner guy and an ex-China's Got Talent judge. And the streaming services are going to be put under this new division. But that's not what's important. What's important is it suggests that they've got other ambitions in the music space and in the digital music space. So obviously... Everyone still thinks China, it's quite hard to make money out of China at the moment, certainly as a Western music rights owner, not least because not many Chinese people want to listen to your music. But still, massive opportunities in that market and new services going live there, perhaps in the future, is definitely something to look out for.
There's been a Twitter campaign around the Fair Pay, Fair Play Act.
Did you tweet, Andy?
I did not.
This
I
is
didn't
the attempt...
know that there was a Twitter campaign until we wrote about it.
Well, that means that you didn't read the bottom of one of my stories last week, because I preempted this as well as reporting on it in retrospect. So look at that. That's Andy Malt, editor of CMU, admitting that he didn't read one edition of CMU Daily in full.
I didn't. I actually, there was a point. There was a day when I reckon it was the day that I was off.
All right, then. We'll let you off on that. So, yes, this is the attempt by the record industry to get AM and FM radio stations in the US to pay royalties like they do everywhere else in the world, but not in America. Fair Play, Fair Pay Act would introduce that if they can just get it through bloody Congress. And last week, all the famous artists were tweeting, support this, support this. So let's hope people in Washington were logged into Twitter. Otherwise, it would have been a massive waste of time. But no, good effort on everyone.
Well done, everyone.
Yeah. I mean, that wasn't meant to be as patronising as it sounded. But I will be sending you all the chocolate orange.
And just quickly, there's time for a little update on the Katy Perry convent situation.
Did we talk about that on the podcast?
We did talk about it briefly on the podcast before. Katy Perry is trying to buy an ex-convent.
In Hollywood.
In Hollywood. And there's a dispute. The nuns who used to live there and the archdiocese that... I don't know what their role, what you'd say. They own it, run it. There's a dispute over who they sell to. The archdiocese wants to sell it to Katy Perry. The nuns want to sell it to a local restaurant owner.
And the original news was they'd already sold it to the restaurant owner, and the restaurant owner had moved in.
There's some slight confusion over this story, which I don't feel is music industry focused enough for me to go and really find
to fly
out
over
what's
there
going
and
on.
Find out what's going on.
But some documents in this case came out this week, which showed some correspondence between the nuns and the archdiocese, in which the nuns basically said that they've checked out some Katy Perry videos, and they believe that if they agreed to sell this convent to Katy Perry, it would contravene their vows they've made to God. And that just seems like an unfair play, really.
So,
can't pull God into this. Go, no, God says no.
God says no. There's a reality TV show in that somewhere. So
somewhere, I'm not sure where.
Remains to be seen if Katy gets her her convent in Hollywood. One Direction.
One
news.
Direction. Yeah, now come on, let's talk about One Direction. This is great. This is one of, I think, where you wrote this, but I agree that it's one of the greatest stories of the year so far.
This isn't the news, the rumours that One Direction are going on hiatus. Simon Cowell gave a little interview where he said, I'm fine if One Direction go on hiatus. Basically, he was saying they've written enough songs that I can exploit them for the rest, for the rest of all time with greatest hits albums and blah, blah, blah. So he's fine with them going on hiatus, which is interesting because they haven't announced they're going on hiatus.
Yeah, he's preempted himself a little bit. But then we're not talking about that.
That's not the story we're interested in.
That's not one of the greatest stories of the year. The story is that there's a One Direction remix competition to remix their song Steal My Girl, which notably is a song recorded when Zayn was still in the group and times were happier.
Indeed.
It's a competition organised by Sony Music and a company called Talent House, which does a lot of these things. And basically, they said, here are the stems, here are the individual parts of the song. You go, people, go and remix it and then upload your remixes to your SoundCloud profile and send them to us and we'll listen to them and we'll pick a winner who wins, I think, like £1,500. So that's, like, worth having. Only problem is, due to poor internal communication at Sony, who would have imagined there was such a thing? People were uploading their tracks to SoundCloud and then Sony was taking them down. And people were complaining and being told to go away.
And we know this because one particular person, UK-based, actually it was a UK competition, I think he had to be in the UK.
Yeah, Lee Adams is his name.
Yeah, and he tried to do this, he uploaded his content and then he got taken down and then he responded to SoundCloud and said, well, hang on a second, I've done this as part of a Sony competition, and SoundCloud emailed back and said, well, that doesn't mean you earn the copyright. What do you want us to do about it, basically? So then he emailed this Talent House company, who I think then they sorted it.
They did iron it out. I think, yes, the track is up there now.
Well, no, but then it got taken down again.
Oh, did it?
That was the point. Talent House sorted it, and he's like, oh, well, that's fine. And then he went back in another day, and it had been blocked again. So Sony's use of SoundCloud's equivalent of Content ID to track where people are uploading their content without permission. And obviously earlier this year, the rumour was that Sony was struggling to get a deal with SoundCloud, whereas Warner had done a deal, the indies had done a deal. Sony was struggling to do a deal now that SoundCloud want to be licensed. And they've become quite vigilante in taking their content down. But you would think that when they're encouraging fans to put it up as part of a competition, that would be the one time when they would not be so vigilante on their SoundCloud.
You would think that, but I think this is just a case of a marketing department not talking to Well, it's just no one in Sony talking to anyone.
Something similar did happen a couple of years ago. Do you remember when Record of the Day used to have their awards, and we used to help organise the student awards?
Yes.
And because we used our contacts in the universities, and we used to put a track on the website and tell all the students, all the sort of the music editors of student newspapers to review it, and then we had editors of like the NME or Clash judging which one was the best. And we always used to go to a label, and it was one of the majors, and they were like, "Oh, this is a great opportunity."
It was Warner.
You know, snitching there. we'll put our content.
Well, we've already mentioned Sony. We might as well drag them all in.
This is a great opportunity for us to get our music in front of all these opinion formers on university. We'll get involved in that. So they gave us the music. We uploaded it to SoundCloud, and then the same thing. Then when our students were going on to try and review it, Warner had it taken down. So yes, it's this bit not talking to this bit. Classic problem in big companies. But it did give us quite an amusing story this week.
I mean, you go back as far as that, actually, it's happened more recently, I would say, with a remix competition with Sony and Talent House.
But that wasn't a takedown.
It wasn't a
takedown. But it was bad communication.
It was bad communication. It was the time that we reported on one of Talent House's remix competitions, and then Sony got in touch to accusing us of making the whole thing up.
It was a different Sony company, to be fair.
It was
Sony Xperia. Was that what that thing was called? And Sony Music and Talent House. And yes, it was some big initiative that they'd done. We reported on it. And then Sony Xperia emailed us and said, "What's this?
We've never heard of this competition. You've made it up."
Even though they were the sponsor.
Yeah.
And it was the Sony companies working together. So, yes.
Communicate, companies. That is our conclusion there.
Although, seemingly, we quite like bad internal comms.
Yeah, so maybe don't.
So the message
no
should
be... No one talked to anyone on this.
Yeah, carry on not talking to each other.
Shut down all internal communications.
To demonstrate how committed we are to that, I might now stop talking to you.
Okay. Well, I'll do the outro then, and you can shut up. That was the CMU podcast. Please subscribe to it, rate and review. Rate and review on iTunes, you bastards. It's really not got enough.
Has it not?
No. You're not supposed to be talking.
I'm not.
So that's my...
I'll get my mum to rate it this week.
Yeah, get your mum. Is your mum on iTunes?
I don't know.
Probably. Everyone's on iTunes now. They're all using Apple Music while it's free. But yeah, give us just rate it 5 stars. Why has everyone not done this? And then just go on, you know, SoundCloud, Audioboom, Mixcloud, something like that. Take the link and tweet it. Put it on your Facebook. I'm not going to be happy unless this time next week we've got 1 million listeners. That is my aim for next week.
Good. Looking forward to that.
I will tweet if we get there. So you can follow us on CMU, at CMU, to find out if we reach 1 million listeners. I am much nicer than I sound at the moment. I'm a very happy person, generally, but you are bastards. My name's Andy Malt. That's Chris Cook. It was produced by Matt Peaty, this podcast was. We're CMU. Go to completemusicupdate.com to find out more.
I've just got to say this, Andy.
Yeah?
Chocolate oranges are available from Rawlinson's.
Recorded at Unique Facilities, the CMU podcast is an unlimited production in association with 7 Digital.